The Lessons Learned for Vets podcast is proud to be brought to you by AFMA, the American Armed Forces Mutual Aid Association. Established in 1879, they are the longest standing nonprofit association empowering military families with affordable financial solutions for generations, offering life insurance, wealth management, mortgages, survivor assistance, and other benefits. AFMA is here to support you through every stage of life. AFMA is dedicated to helping service members be financially and logistically ready for life after the military. To support you in this process, AFMA would like to offer you their free downloadable transition timeline, a step-by-step guide to help you create a comprehensive military transition plan. Let AFMA help you get ready for your next step by visiting AFMA.com/LL4V, that's AAFMAA.com/LL4V, or clicking the link in the show notes. Welcome to the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast, your military transition debrief from the veteran mentors who've gone before you. My name is Lori Norris, and I've been teaching veterans how to successfully navigate their military transition since 2005. I'm a civilian who speaks the language of all branches of the U.S. military, and I am on a mission to educate veterans in the job search marketing process. Sit back and enjoy the military transition hot washes and after action reports of your fellow veterans. You may just learn some lessons that smooth your own transition path. Welcome to the transition Q&A session of the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast. Today, I'm really happy to have Andrew Infante with me. I reached out to Andrew after he made a really cool post announcing that he was going to be entering the job market. And we are going to talk about that at the end of this episode. So stick around for that. So Andrew, welcome to the show. And just give us a little bit of overview of who you are and what's happening with you.
So Lori, thank you for having me. I'm super excited to be here. I've been listening to the podcast for the last couple months, and I've been looking forward to today. So like you said, my name is Andrew Infante. I've been in the Army for almost 20 years. About half of my time is spent into the IT field as a 25 Bravo. And then currently right now, I'm a career recruiter for the United States Army. And that's what I've been doing for the last about 10 years. And now looking forward to retiring in the next year. Should be available to work come spring of 2023. And just excited to see what pans out for the rest of the world for my new chapter in life.
Are you looking to maybe bring those two together and do something in talent acquisition in the technology career field?
Yeah, correct. So I enjoy helping people out. I enjoy the recruiting side of the Army. And even though the talent acquisition is a little bit different on the civilian side, I'm excited to maintain in that same field. So I'm looking at any either talent acquisition or technical recruiting once I move back to Florida, because that's where I'm originally from.
So you're headed back to Florida. What part of Florida will you be living in?
Around the Tampa, Orlando area. Okay. Even though I'm from Miami, I'm not trying to go all the way back home, but Central Florida is kind of cool. That's where we were. That's where we lived at before we moved here.
Early 2023, available for roles in talent acquisition, possibly even technical IT communications companies, where you can leverage your background in technology and your knowledge of talent acquisition and recruiting strategy. You want to live in the Central Florida area, but again, talent acquisition often is a remote role these days, so you really can do it from anywhere.
I think that's kind of key. That's what something that I enjoy is working from home, having that flexibility of making sure I still able to take my kids to school and being more involved in the family aspect compared to what it was being in the military for these last 20 years.
And I will put a link to Andrew's LinkedIn so that you can connect with him if you know of any great opportunities where he would be a good fit for you. Well, I hear you have some questions for me.
Definitely. I have a couple questions for you.
Okay.
So the rumor is that recruiters only spend about 6 to 10 seconds or whatever the rumor is on a resume. As a professional resume writer as yourself, what are your thoughts on the summary section? Is it a waste of space? Should I use that for something different? Just what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I want to talk first about the resume skimming process, and then we'll talk about that summary section, okay? So I think that, you know, you're right. That is kind of the average that people say. They, in the first 6 to 10 seconds of looking at a resume, they make a decision if they're going to keep reading or not. And so we know that they're skimming it, right? So they're kind of just skimming down the resume. And so I've had to become a student of how people kind of skim through documents and try to figure out how do we capture their attention and hold them there, right? So I do have some strategies to help you make it through that initial scan. And now oftentimes by the time it gets to that recruiter or the hiring manager, it's also already been run through an applicant tracking software. ATS isn't making the decision for the recruiter, but it's kind of racking and stacking the resumes based on keyword relevance and just their own criteria of how they're looking at the resume. And so the recruiter now is looking at, okay, I've got, you know, these top 30, whatever the number is that I'm going to look at personally. And so one of the things we want to do is make sure we've translated our job titles and we've put those translated job titles in bold font to the left of the paper. And so that they can very quickly skim down our job titles, our translated job titles, see if they're relevant and something that they even feel like is worth reading about, right? That's one way. Then we also want to do primarily write in bullets, not a lot of paragraphs. Like you can have short, you know, 2-3 line paragraphs, but mostly bullets. And I really don't recommend going more than 5 to 7 bullets per job and then front load those bullets with your results. So as they read those first 3 to 5 words of each bullet, if it's, you know, increased employee retention, 27%, reduced recruiting costs, $3 million. I mean, I'm just making things up now, right? But if they see those results front loaded on your resume, they're more likely to read the entire thing. And so those are just some ways for you to very quickly make it through that scan. So we want to capture their attention and make sure that they stay, right? And the reason that they don't give you that much time is because there's so much irrelevant information that people are putting out there that they're like, I'm just going to move on and find the relevant person, right? So you want to make sure right up front, you are showing that you are a relevant candidate with experience that they need. So now that brings me back to your summary question. And one of the ways that you can really clearly showcase that you are a valuable candidate is through your summary. And I know that the summary gets a bad rap, and a lot of recruiters will tell you, it's not necessary, get rid of it. Because they're not necessarily spending a lot of time there because they skim over that summary and go right to your job titles.
Yeah.
But at the very top of your resume, I want you to, instead of using like put the word summary and then have this paragraph of fluff, I want you to have like a headline that tells me right at the top, what are you looking for? What kind of job are you seeking? And kind of so start off with a headline and a tagline that summarizes that you are looking for the job that they are hiring for. You would be amazed at how many people just send the same resume and so full of irrelevant information that they want to know right up front that you're the right candidate. You know what your summary is for. It's a place to very quickly and shortly encapsulate your best highlights of qualifications. But more importantly, it should very clearly communicate what job you're looking for. And so that's what that summary is for. So yes, I believe in it. However, use it to the best of your ability to communicate that you are a targeted, focused candidate. You know exactly what you're looking for. And that's where, when you target and focus your resumes to different jobs and companies, that's really where you want to start so that that headline matches up with the job that you're applying for.
It's like a movie trailer. You're trying to tease them to want them to watch the movie or to actually read more about your resume.
Exactly. And yeah, and you want to show them right there that you've got, you know, in your synopsis, if you will, right? Where you and I are like, you know, we remember Cliff Notes, right? So that you know, you've got that kind of Cliff Notes of why you're the right candidate for the job. So the first line of your summary is really important. It should very clearly state, what are you looking for? What kind of job are you seeking? How many years of experience do you have in that job? And why are you good at it, right? That's what that first line, that first kind of area of your resume should state. But that's your best place to showcase, like, I am targeted and focused on the job that you're looking to hire me for. And you would be amazed at how many people I look at their resume. I'm like, okay, what kind of job are you looking for? Because they haven't really clearly spelled it out. There you go. There's the summary and a little bit more thrown in.
I got a to-do list already to fix my summary, because I've kept it and I've heard the same thing of, you know, it's a waste of space. It's not. I wish I can just get one of those like eye tracking things of what recruiters are actually looking at and spending their time on. But yeah, now I have a to-do list. So I appreciate that.
Well, and you know, recruiters are humans, right? And so everybody's looking for different things. And that's why resumes make everyone so crazy, is because resumes are as subjective as beauty. Different people find different things beautiful, and resumes are no exception to that. And so think strategically about your resume instead of thinking about, oh, I want it to be so beautiful. Like it does. I mean, it needs to be clean, easy to read, organized, and have some white space. It needs to be readable. But more importantly, it's like the meat, the content of your resume that really matters to that recruiter. And so if you focus on like the meat and the content and really strategically what the person reading it wants to know, then your resume is going to stand out from the crowd.
Yeah, and definitely goes back to, you know, your other episodes about tailoring each resume for each job and not just spray and pray, in a sense.
Yeah. You know, I think that people hear that like, oh, I have to tailor every resume. Well, that doesn't mean that you're applying to 100 jobs a week. If you're doing this right, I think I've said it, right? It's like, you're only applying to like 5, maybe if you're really industrious, 10 jobs a week, but you're starting with the foundation of a targeted resume already. Yeah. Like, you know what kind of job you're looking for, what kind of industry you want to work in. And so you already have a resume that's targeted to that. Then you just have to like read about the company, learn about their culture, do some research, read the job posting, make sure you've covered all the high points. And that doesn't take as long if you start from a targeted resume, right?
Yeah, most definitely. All right. So here's my second question. As a transitioning veteran, and I've seen this on just multiple LinkedIn and just people just talking in general, most people are attracted to these massive companies, the Amazons, Microsoft, Apples of the world. How do you combat being stuck behind a brand name for a potential employer? And are we also setting ourselves up for failure, focusing just on the big name? And what are your thoughts on shooting for like a startup organization?
So, you know, just like everything, right? There's good and there's bad with both. But I will tell you that I want you to kind of open your mind to all possibilities and look at both those industry giants and those smaller companies for your opportunities, right? So I think it's important to know kind of the environment in which you thrive best, which I think you and I are going to talk about culture here pretty soon. And so that kind of ties back to this, right? Is like, what kind of environment do you want to work in? Like, so big companies have pretty solid processes and procedures. They're pretty, you know, regimented in how they do things, where small companies tend to be more fluid. If you find, you know, like, I don't know how we do it, just go figure it out. If you don't like that, then a smaller company may not be good for you, or a startup, right? But maybe you really love looking at processes and establishing those standardized procedures. Then a startup would be a great place where you can add value, where a large company, there might be a lot of red tape that you have to go through to really make an impact. In a large company, you typically have a smaller, more siloed kind of portion of responsibility, Where in a small company, it's like you get exposed to a lot more because there are fewer of you, right? As employees, you've got to wear lots of hats, right? So I think you'll get more breadth of experience in a startup or a smaller company, where you may get more depth of experience in a large company. Again, like part of this is all asking yourself, like, what kind of environment do I want to work in? You know, large companies are really structured, really standardized, where like a lot of those small companies and especially startups, they might be still building the airplane on their way down, right? Like we talked about with Samira the other day. If you love creativity and you love flexibility and you have no issues with change, then that's really maybe a good place for you. But if you're very structured and you like very meticulous processes, like a big company might be better for you. So again, it depends on like who you are and where you thrive. And maybe you don't know because you've been in the Army for 10, 20 years.
I'm used to the structure of every day. This is what you're going to do. This is how it is. And you just say, okay. And that's what I'm kind of used to. And some people are just like, oh, no, you should kind of stay away, you know, from startups. And I'm like, well, one, how do you know? Because you haven't transitioned. And then two, it's just, you don't know what's going to pan out. Hey, that startup can be a great way for you to get all that experience that you're trying to look for, or it might not be. You don't know until you try it. So you kind of have to like risk it for the biscuit, I guess.
And, you know, the thing is like that you have to remember is like, maybe you take a role with startup and you figure out that that's not the right environment for you, then you can leverage your Army experience and your startup experience into a different role. And, you know, you're never locked into anything. You always have the option to go other places. But because you've been in that structured Army environment, like, I'll tell you, like, that would kill me. Like, the structure and, like, do it exactly like this. Like, I'm really bad. This is why I would never have made it in the military, is that I don't like to follow rules if it don't make sense. I would probably love it, got him bounced out, like get back in boot camp. So I know my limitations, right? So I am a small business owner and I am okay with uncertainty. I'm okay with change and flexibility and kind of like that agile environment. So you just have to figure out where you fit best for that. You know, here's the big thing though, right? Typically, big companies pay better salaries to start, right? Small companies and startups can't pay as much. However, when they succeed, you're typically a part of that in a much grander scale. And can get that financial reward from that down the road. If you like an autonomous role and you like to dictate like how you work and what you do and where you do it, then a small company probably would work better for you. Where you want like clear direction and a solid support system, a big company might be better for you. Again, it's always a matter of like, you know, what do you want for your future, right? Big companies, your trajectory may be slower than in a small company because they move slower, right? So things are not necessarily always moving as fast. But I mean, I could take all of what I just said and erase it with a couple of really big companies that are very agile and are growing really fast. And so I think it's also a case-by-case basis.
Yeah.
That you have to research the company and see what their culture is like. Are they really flexible and adaptable? Do you have a lot of cross-functional ability to work with other teams? So don't discount the little guys and don't solely focus on the big guys. You know, so I would say, I don't know. That's my answer is, I don't know, Andrew, what's best for you?
So like you said, like you're not tied to anything. And I think that's the biggest thing that a big obstacle for the veterans, especially the longer that they've been in, is that they don't want, they're thinking they're going into another 20-year career. Yeah. We're not tied to that. If it's 6 months, if it's a year, if it's 5 years, you can pick up and leave compared to the military, that you can't just do that. So it's just overcoming that tradition and that history of what we've been doing for the last, you know, X amount of years. But yeah, you definitely read my mind about culture. I got my next question's about culture. So,
well, let me just say one more thing about kind of leaving the military is stop expecting it to be the same in the next phase of your career, Because it will not be. It's going to be different. And so the sooner you can open your mind to the changes that are headed your way, and the sooner you can learn to adapt and be flexible, which I know you can do all of those things. Like, the military has taught you to be all of those things. But you need to come to terms with the fact that it will be vastly different working in the private sector. And that's okay. Like, there are so many benefits and values that come with it being very different. But you just have to be able to accept and be ready for the fact that it is not going to be the same.
My wife tells me that all the time as we're getting closer and closer. She's like, it's not going to be the same as the military. And I'm like, I know. I'm going to tone it down. So we were talking about culture a second ago. For a lot of veterans, I hear them talking about the importance of culture for their new career between like a military friendly and a military ready employer. What are some questions that we can ask to recruiters and hiring managers to decipher what kind of culture that organization has?
So I think the first thing to start with here is, you, like we talked about last time, is like on the last question is, we need to figure out what culture works for us.
Yeah.
What kind of a culture do you think works best for your personality, your communication style, the way you like to function as a leader and as someone who interacts with their leader, right? Like, what kind of a management style are you looking for? So what kind of people do you want to work with? Or do you not want to work with people? You only want to work with machines and technology, right? So what's your favorite leadership style? Like, do you like more of like a very structured hierarchical leadership? Do you like more of a flat where, you know, there's a lot of like inner agency collaboration, and maybe you have like dotted lines to people, but you don't necessarily report to them, but they still can govern, you know, what you do with your day. So how much flexibility do you want? You know, when you're deployed, you have a very structured environment, but, and the higher you go in the military, your flexibility opens up a little bit, right? Yeah. And so do you want that same kind of flexibility? Do you want to work in the office? Do you want to wear a suit, or would you like to wear jeans and a t-shirt, right? So like, think about like these kinds of things. You know, again, like we said, just large company or small company. What kind of core values are you looking for in the company where you want to work? You know, like, how important is like the company's culture and I'm sorry, the company's mission statement to you in terms of, do they give back? Are they engaged in the community, right? How does the company recognize its employees? How do they reward it? So these are all things to ask yourself, like, what works for you? I'm a big fan of some personality assessments so that you really know yourself a little bit better. I'm a big believer in the Myers-Briggs construct of kind of personality typing, and you can figure that out on like 16personalities.com is a website where you can get a free assessment. I also like the book Do What You Are, which is kind of based loosely on the Myers-Briggs formula, and it helps you figure out like what kind of environment you fit in, what kind of employment structure you like. So I think that's the start of culture, right? Is like, first you got to know what you're looking for. And so do some research on those things, right? So now, how do I figure out culture in for an employer? Is first start with research, right?
Yep.
You know, if we just go to their website, we're not going to learn very much about them, right? But it is important to really look at their website, read their mission statement. Like, how do they speak on their website? Is it really formal or is it really casual? Like, even the job postings, like, I've seen job postings that have like, if you're a kick-ass performer, like, you know, they use like colorful language in there. So you get a sense of like how they engage with their employees, right? Yeah, I would say like, look at their online presence. What's their social media like? You know, there are some companies out there that are just, you know, like, I think Arby's is one for being famously funny on their social media, you know, like, is it Wendy's?
I think it's Wendy's.
Okay. So I'm not a fast food aficionado, but yeah, I know somebody's really funny out there. I don't have time for anything but LinkedIn. So again, they go out and see what they're like, follow them on all the channels that they have kind of a presence on out there. Are there any articles written on them? Right. So I'm also a big believer in doing your research on Glassdoor. So Glassdoor.com, you know, it's a funny website. It's like the Yelp of companies, right? It's the people give reviews. And I find that people tend to either love things or hate things on those types of sites. But you can start to see a pattern if everyone's complaining about, I don't know, pay raises or how many hours they're working, then you get a sense of kind of a theme, right? Or, you know, if everyone's praising a certain thing, you could start to see a pattern. Like there's going to be an anomaly here or there. Mm-hmm. You know, when someone doesn't like something or has a grudge against someone, but, you know, start looking for those patterns or trends on Glassdoor. So those are some things you can do ahead of the interview, right? And then when you get into the interview, like take the time to ask questions in that interview. Don't miss that opportunity to take control of the interview, right? There's going to come a time where they're like, okay, well, I'm all out of questions. Do you have any questions for me? And most people are like, no, I don't have any questions. And that's a bad idea.
Yeah. Everywhere you read or you hear is like, you have to have some questions.
Yes.
Right. So basically everything that you've said is, you know, definitely research. And then the interview is a two-way street. You're interviewing that organization just as much as they're interviewing you.
Yeah. So definitely. And come like armed with questions about their culture and don't be afraid to ask them. I always say like bring at least 5 or 6 questions and always ask 3 or 4. And, you know, they don't have to all come at the end. You can actually turn the interview into a conversation and ask them questions too. Now, government agencies like, you know, county, city, state government and federal government, they're very regimented in how they have their interview set up. Corporations, you absolutely can turn it into a conversation. And I think it takes the pressure off of the interview too when you're there thinking that you're there to interview them as much as they're interviewing you, right? I put some questions together that you could ask in an interview that are directly related to culture. So you could ask the interviewer, like, what do you like about working here? So if they can't give you an answer, that might tell you something, right? And, you know, you can even ask, like, what would you change about the company if you could? Right? They're like, oh, I'd really like to stop getting phone calls on Sunday mornings. You know, like, oh, no. So, you know, you could ask them, like, what does a typical work day look like? What does a typical work week look like in this role? You know, then I'll talk about a little bit about, like, how late you're going to have to work. You know, like, are you going to have to travel? That sort of thing. So I would ask, like, what personality traits make a successful candidate in this role? And then they'll give you a little bit of insight into kind of who they're looking for. And if that describes who you are, what do you wish you'd known before you started working here? And that's what you never know, right? How does your company set itself apart from its competitors? And that's always a good one too. So it just gives you an opportunity to see kind of like how they discuss the organization. And I don't know that they're always asked those kinds of questions. And so I feel like that, I don't want to say catch them off guard, but that is really kind of what we want to do.
It sets you off apart from everybody else if you're asking something that most people don't ask.
And it shows that you're really interested in the organization too. And that's one of the reasons we always want to ask questions. Obviously, we want to ask questions because we want to gather information. But if you don't ask questions, it makes you look unprepared and uninterested. And we don't want that in an interview. So you're right. And then also in the interview, I want you to think about like nonverbal communication. Right. So how do they treat you? Are they respectful of your time? Right. Like, do you feel welcomed and connected to the interviewer? So I think those things are really important. I just helped my 20-year-old daughter through the job search process for her very first like real professional internship that she's going to start this summer. And she had two companies. Thought that company B was the one she was going to go with. It really aligned well with her her jobs, you know, her future and her goals. And so, but she went to Company A's interview because, you know, you got to try everything, right? Well, Company A was so welcoming and friendly, and they started like a personal conversation and really engaged with her and just made her feel really good. Company B didn't turn on the camera in the video interview, had terrible technical difficulties, kind of like you and I did earlier, and wasn't willing to like try to fix those. Or like, let's just press forward. And so she could only hear like half of the interview question and just didn't get any like feedback or engagement with that second company. And so of course she was like, I would really rather work for Company A, right, than Company B, even though Company B was originally her, you know, her target. Come to find out, Company B loved her and was overly enthusiastic about her as a candidate. But by that time, when she found that out, she'd really kind of already settled on, I want to go to the first company because I felt better about it, right? And so that can happen where like that one bad experience can ruin it. And so don't hesitate to look for those nonverbal keys from that interviewer, right? And then also think about like the work environment. If you get to go in person, which is great, right? But that doesn't happen very often anymore. But then also like if you're interviewing with multiple people, how do they interact with each other? You know, so I've heard some stories about how the interviewers engage with each other on these like panel style video interviews. So, and then last but not least, like trust your gut. Right? Because they may not be truthful. They may tell you, yeah. Oh, yeah, we always leave at 5. We love a work-life balance. And yet everyone there has dark circles under their eyes and looks like they're chained to their desk. You got to trust your gut sometimes, right?
That's all goes into one of your previous podcasts that don't put all your eggs in one basket. So if she would have done the same thing and just focus on B, she would have never had the opportunity for A. And then there's the silver lining in Company A. So,
yeah, keep your mind open and yeah, like always keep your options open. You're absolutely right. And had she not gone into that first interview with Company A with an open mind, no matter how engaging they were, she probably still would have said, no, I want to go over here. Right. And so then how disappointed would she have been with, you know, how that interview went. So, yeah, absolutely. You've got to go into every single interview with an open mind and just see how it goes.
So for, I guess, another statistic, right, because I'm a big numbers guy. So maybe I should have told you that before. So I've read a lot of, or the majority of veterans, I think it's like 60% leave their first like job after the military between 6 months to a year. What can transitioning veterans do before accepting a role at their first job to reduce that statistic of them just leaving and basically starting all over in a year or 2 years from now?
So I want to ask you a question about this one. So what do you think causes them to leave in that first 6 months to a year? Like, what are some things that you think would cause you to leave a job?
It wasn't what they thought it was going to be. They put all their eggs in one basket. I know we just talked about that, but I think it's they took the first opportunity that was presented to them and they stopped. They stopped looking, they stopped networking, they stopped doing everything. And then they found out, yeah, this is not what I thought it was. It's not this, you know, rainbows and butterflies at this company. I should have done this. I should have been open-minded to the other interview, or it should have even showed up because I know showed because I got this offer that I was happy with. That's just, that's just me. I haven't obviously gone through it yet, but that's what I'm thinking. I want to be able to be like, okay, yeah, this is the company I want to work for and, you know, be there for more than 6 months.
And you and I actually really did. I didn't tell you I was going to throw it back at you, but you kind of like went through all of the things that I'm going to recommend to you. It's like, first and foremost, don't make knee-jerk rash decisions out of fear. And I think that we've talked about it a lot on this show. So anybody that's listened to all the episodes up until now, you've heard me say this, but I'm going to say it again because I know that you have to hear things multiple times for it to sink in. And that is that you are going to be fine in this process. You will land a job, period. Now, I also want you to realize that the transition is so much more than just checkmark taking a job, right? The transition is a process that you need to go through. And so I think that what tends to happen with especially retirees, right? Is like, I've got to feed my family. I've got to keep a roof over my head. I've got to keep food in my kids' bellies, right? And if you really, truly sat down and looked at the numbers of what you're going to be bringing in with your retirement and what your spouse earns and what your bills truly are and what you have saved, I want you to really look at that, like, so that you have that realistic view of like, okay, if everything stops coming in, like, how much am I going to be making? How much am I going to have to be pulling out of savings to stay in the lifestyle? Where could I cut if I had to? Like, have a backup plan so that you don't make a decision out of fear. And so that's the big thing, is I think that oftentimes we're just trying to get to that check the box, got a job, now I can worry about the other thing, right? And you mentioned earlier, like, keep networking, keep your options open, keep moving forward. And, you know, it's like, if you've accepted a job offer and you haven't started yet, is it wrong to keep looking and to keep your options open? You didn't sign a contract with them. There's something amazing could be out there waiting for you. So you have to be in charge of your career, period. And you might keep your options open and realize that your first choice was the best one for you all along, and that's great. But there's nothing wrong with continuing to look. So take your time in this process. Now I'm not going to say don't take the first thing offered, because the first thing offered might be amazing, right? But I just don't want you to make a decision out of fear. When someone offers you a job, you can say, great, give me a couple of days to think about everything and look at my options and I'll get back to you. You don't have to take that job just because they offered it to you. You get a job offer. There's nothing wrong with going out and pulling together a little research and coming back prepared to negotiate salary. There's nothing wrong with kind of, you know, evaluating where you're at in your other job offers and making a decision based on that. And so I think that I just want you to slow down and make an informed, strategic decision that's best for your career. And doing that, I think, would help this process. And then the other reason I think that so many veterans leave that first job so quickly is that they undervalued themselves from the start. And they didn't figure out how to market their skills and their value effectively. And so they did get offered a lower level position than they're really capable of. And they get out there and they're bored, or they feel underpaid, because they probably are. And so they make that move. And you know what? I think the biggest reason that this happens is because you can leave. Yeah. It's a newfound freedom, right? And so, yeah, like, this isn't working for me. I can go. Wow, that's amazing. No one's going to come arrest me. I'm not going to go AWOL. So I think that there are lots of factors. But again, slow down. Make the best decision for you. Don't let anyone rush you. You know, there's nothing wrong with asking for, you know, 3 days, 4 days to make a decision on a job offer and really weighing if it's the right thing for you. And I will tell you that, like, saying no to jobs is as important as how you say yes to them. Right? Remember I told you about my daughter earlier, the A company and the B company? Well, when she told the B company that she was accepting another offer, she did it in a very professional way. And she also offered to serve as a resource of referrals for other students for that company, so that it was a positive way of ending that relationship with company B, so that if she ever wants to come back to them in the future, I think they'll remember her. So just remember that like turning down a job is important.
She didn't burn that bridge. So.
Yeah, never burn a bridge. Never burn a bridge. You're right. Because, you know, just because that recruiter is at company B today doesn't mean that recruiter is always going to be there, right?
That's true. Because they don't have to stay.
Exactly. Okay. Hopefully that helps answer that question.
No, it does. It does. So my last question for you. So being in the military for 20 years, and even the people that are listening that have only been in for, you know, 4 or 5 years, promotions and permit and positions and increased responsibilities happen all the time in the military. What is a good time frame to stay in a position before looking into applying within that organization or outside without it seem like you're a job hopper and you're destroying your resume because you're just leaving every, you know, 6 to 8 months.
And I will caution you, like, as much as I said, you can leave whenever you want to, you have to remember that when you do decide to leave, you're going to have to explain that someday. Yeah. Somewhere down the road, someone's going to ask you, why did you leave? And you're going to need to be ready to have a conversation about that. And you don't want, like, you know, your military career is kind of that stability. And then you kind of bounce around like a ping pong ball afterwards. And so while, yes, you can leave when you want to, is it a good idea for your career to constantly take a job, leave it, take another job, leave it? No, right? So there's no like hard and fast rule as to how long you must stay in a job. But again, just remember that adds to your resume. It adds a section. You're going to have to explain it. So take that time, like we said before, to really evaluate each role before you accept it and start that job. I'd love to see you stay in a job for 1 to 2 years before making a change, but that's just not always realistic. I mean, there are going to be companies where you get in there and within weeks, you're going to know like, ugh, I cannot stay here. And so again, you deserve to be happy. You deserve to be treated well. You deserve to feel fulfilled in your career. Okay. If those aren't happening, then you should reconsider the direction that you've gone in. So just be strategic and choose wisely about the direction that you take. I will tell you that in today's market, you might need to change companies to make a career move forward, to have forward progress in your career. It's just kind of the way that the market is right now. You might need to change companies to get a better salary, to get to that next level. It just depends on the company itself. I can think of stories off the top of my head of someone who's already been promoted 4 times in about a year and a half with their organization. And I could tell you stories of someone that had to change jobs 3 times to go a bump in salary. Like, I just off the top of my head, I have a woman that I know that just went from a director level to a CEO level with more than a $250,000 total compensation package increase because she went to a different company.
That's life changing.
That is very life changing, isn't it? But you know, like $10,000 is life changing too. Like, imagine another $1,000 in your pocket every month. So, or, you know, almost 1,000. So math is not my strong suit, right? So, you know, obviously, like, that's an unusual situation that I just described, but you have to be your own career manager. I say this all the time, like, you have to take charge of your future. There's not a career counselor or a first sergeant to kind of guide and mentor you along. You've got to make those smart decisions, right? So that's kind of my answer to that question, is try to stick it out. And, you know, if things are not going well, have a conversation. with your boss, right? I mean, there is a chance that maybe you're taking on more than you need to, just because that's who you are. And maybe their expectations of you are not nearly as high as your expectations are of yourself, right? Maybe if you don't like the way the communication is happening, you can help be a catalyst for change in that company to improve their internal communication. So, like, I don't want you to just throw in the towel and give up when it gets tough. I know you're not going to do that, right? But like, just remember, like, just consider all the options, but there are going to be times where there's no other choice but to leave, and that's okay. Just don't do it like 7 times a year. Okay.
Just six.
That would make my life hard as a resume writer to try to explain that. So
that, and you're just starting the process over so many times. It's you'll go crazy doing that.
Yeah, exactly. So we kind of alluded to it earlier that I originally reached out to you because you made a post about your kind of entry into the job search market. And so I commented on that post, like, everybody take notice. This is how you do it, right? This is how you make that announcement. So I am going to link to Andrew's post in the show notes. So you will find a link to that. But if you go to his LinkedIn, you'll see it up there and his activities. So I want you to tell me a little bit about that. And then I'm going to talk about how to do that announcement effectively. So tell me a little bit about your post and kind of what inspired it and what it was all about.
So I, just like every transitioning, well, I wouldn't say every, but majority of transitioning veterans, I'm like addicted to my LinkedIn now. It's really the only platform I really use. And then I was watching YouTube videos on how to make my profile better, how to stand out, what to do, profile picture, everything. And I ran into a YouTube video and it was talking about, hey, do a video resume. And I'm like a social introvert. I was like, I don't know if I want to just randomly talk to myself in my office and record this video. And then I saw another example. It was like, well, you don't need to talk. You don't need to do anything. Put a picture of yourself and then let everything else do it. So I was like, okay, I'll do it. Spent about an hour and some change on, I would say, my script and how I wanted it to look out. And I showed it to my wife and I was like, is this cheesy? She's like, well, if you don't put nothing, there's nothing. So you have nothing to lose by just putting it out there. So I was like, okay, put it out there. And I think by far it's the most engaging post I've ever had on LinkedIn. And it's not even a lot, but I've gotten great feedback on it. And they're like, hey, this is great. You reached out. But multiple people are just like, hey, that's a great idea. People that are doing LinkedIn classes, they've gone on my profile in front of classes and said, hey, you know, this is an example of what you can do. Yeah. So maybe I might go back and do something with me actually talking. But that's where I got the idea. I used a free website that did pretty much everything for me. I just made it the way I wanted to.
Well, I think it was a great idea. Has anything come from that? Did your connections expand? Did anybody reach out to you with opportunities? Anything happen from that?
I had a bunch of connection requests come in through. Because I know when I first started my LinkedIn, you know, the goal was like 500. So I was trying to get to the 500 mark. Now I'm way surpass that. I think that brought in, you know, a handful of people. I've had a couple of people reach out because I've advertised on my post that I'm looking for SkillBridge. So I had a couple of people reach out saying, hey, when are you going to SkillBridge? Looking to our company for SkillBridge. So I started looking at that. So it kind of opened some doors, even though I'm so far out still. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm thinking of just redoing it again later on in the future once I'm actually closer. Because I put myself out there, and then every time somebody liked it or commented it, it just went into another person's network for them to potentially view it. And most right. people like more than just words, because that's the social media marketing society that we live in now. So
right.
I think that kind of helped me in a way.
So maybe a combination of like stock video and you talking, combination of like reading the words and you know, having a conversation with the viewer could help, right? So, I mean, I think it's a really important thing to do. especially as you're getting ready to transition out of the military, is to really just say, hey, network, I'm ready to go now, and announce in some way that you're ready to begin your job search. You know, I think that most veterans that I see that do this, they're like, hey, I'm completing my military service and looking for a new role. Please reach out with any leads. And they don't tell anyone what they're doing. Like, well, what do you specialize in, right? So don't make people work to help you. Make it easy for them to help you, right? People really do want to help you. They want to give, it's a great feeling. I don't know if you've ever had this where you've connected someone to a job opportunity and they landed it. And it's such a great feeling to know that you helped someone, and everyone wants that wants to do that for people, but don't make it hard for them to do it for you. So you want to really clearly tell people how they can help you. So here's some tips from me as to kind of your job search announcement and how to do it effectively. So first of all, I want you to tell me what type of role you're targeting. Right. So very clearly, here's the job I'm looking for. Don't just say I'm looking for a job that helps me leverage my military skills. No, that's like sending a generic resume out there. Right. Tell us your qualifications, like how many years of experience do you have? What's kind of the scope of your responsibility? How many people did you lead? What's the budgets that you managed? Like, what was the scope of the of what you were responsible for out there? Tell us why you're good at the job. One of the things I really liked about your video is you told us a lot about you. You told us a lot about your background, about, you know, your personality, and about what makes you good at what you do. Here's where I want you missed out a little bit, okay? And then I want you to tell us when you're available for work and where you want to live, unless you're open, right, to opportunities. And then I want you to be clear with what you're looking for and how people can help you. Do you want contacts? Do you just want to expand your network? Do you want informational interviews? Like, what is it that you're looking for with the interaction that you get? And the more specific and targeted you are with that post, the more it's going to generate for you.
Definitely.
I think it was a really good job. It's one of the best posts I've seen like that. And I commend you for it. And that is absolutely, like, I know that you and I were connected, like you had done a really nice post about the podcast. And so we were already connected, which, by the way, that was, I always appreciate those, because that's how we've grown to the point where we've grown now, is total grassroots marketing, like what you did. So thank you for that. So I think it was really well done. And that's why I reached out and like, hey, I want you to come and tell us about your video. And you're like, oh no, I don't have any expertise. I don't want to be on that show. So I'm like, okay, fine. Then you can ask questions. And but I got you to talk about yourself after all.
Like I said, I'm a social introvert, and I was just like, let me try out this video. And everything just panned out. I know I had a couple rules, and it was just like, let me talk about myself. And then what I was actually looking for, and I wanted to keep everything under a minute, and it just all panned out. I thought it was just cheesy, and I was like, I'm wasting my time doing this, and it ended up panning out. I got to talk to you. So yeah, I'm excited.
Very cool. Well, I appreciate you coming on and sharing it with all of us. And I, like I said, I'll link to it so everyone can check it out and be ready for more engagement on that post when this episode comes out.
Let's hope, right? But yeah, if anybody wants to connect, I'm free to connecting and talking and helping. If they have any ideas or they want to do the same thing, I can definitely help them out.
And then just one more time, tell us what kind of role you're looking for, where you want to be, and your timeline.
So talent acquisition and recruiting around the Central Florida, Tampa, Orlando type area, and then available spring of 2023.
And spring of 2023 is when you're available to start working or skill bridge?
That'll be at the end of my skill bridge.
Okay.
So I start SkillBridge in January.
Well, anyone can reach out to Andrew if they have opportunities for him. And I encourage you to go check out his post because it's a really great example of how to introduce yourself to the job search market. So Andrew, thank you so much for coming on and helping me answer some questions and working through all the tech issues with me. I really appreciate you.
Thank you, Laurie. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Lessons Learned for Vets podcast. If you learned just one lesson today that you believe can help you in your military transition, then I've done my job. Our goal is to get in the ear of as many active duty service members as possible. So please don't keep this podcast a secret. Share it with as many of your active duty service member friends and transitioning veterans who may be struggling with that process as possible. Please subscribe to our podcast, leave us a review, and join us on our LinkedIn and Facebook communities to tell us what lesson you learned today.